and welcome to another episode of the Impact Lab podcast. I am joined today by a longtime friend and colleague, owner of an awesome agency, Selena Rack. Hi, Selena. How are you?
Hi, Aziz. I'm good. How are you?
Very, very good. Thank you. We caught up last week and it was like a proper old-fashioned blast from the past. Remembering Clem, who you had me in stitches over. By the way, I couldn't find that video. I've got to find it somewhere because radio.
I did try looking for it, actually, to send you the link again after. And I think it might have been taken offline.
Oh, Clem, no.
Clem from Multifarnum maybe decided.
What a legend. Before we start, Selena, we always start with the reverse Turing test. So, where did you and... we worked together in Sutton. Right, London, right? So what was the name of the building that we worked in?
That would be Quadrant House.
Quadrant House. Is that how you spell quadrant?
It is. Brother.
There we go. So hopefully we've proved that we're human, but maybe not. Let's see what AI does in the future.
Let's see how the rest of it goes.
So one of the things that really interested me and why I wanted to have this conversation is that you've got like a lot of really unique experiences that I think people will benefit from. One in particular is managing sort of disparate remote teams or remote people with different specialisms. So how do you go about like just keeping everyone on track, like keeping everyone aligned on a single strategy?
Oh, gosh, that's a really great question. Honestly, just by being really, really organized, I think, you know, we tend to use tools to help us, as much as possible. And I think also just leaning into like what everyone else's preference is. So, you know, if you'd have asked me 5 or 6 years ago, if I would use Asana, I would say absolutely not.
Yeah.
I cannot live without Asana now. and so that, I think it came a time where it just made sense to use something like that. So we have a lot of shared tools. And also I think just like leaning into the way people want to work. Because I think when something is too difficult for people to really, you know, as a process for them to keep doing, then it becomes a bit more of a chore. In terms of like the strategy, you know, we're really fortunate because, you know, I work with lots of really smart people. So, we communicate a lot. We talk about the strategy. We decide on the direction. We are not afraid to pivot if things aren't working out. So it's just really a lot of just organization tools to help us talking, communicating, and not being afraid to say, oh, well, that didn't work. Let's try something else.
Yeah, fair enough. And when we last worked together, which feels like eons ago, and actually it was a long time ago,
it
right?
Was.
It was like 12, 13 years ago or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
Even just saying Sutton gave me chills. Not because of the company. I really loved working at RBI. But Sutton itself wasn't a great place in the universe. What's happened in your life since then? And what are you doing now?
Everything. My gosh. Yeah, I think so. I don't even remember when you left or when I left or if you left first or if I left first. But I took an intra-company transfer with them to Chicago.
Right. No, that was definitely after me.
Okay. Because I feel like that's something you would remember. Yeah. And I went to Chicago for a year. And thought, like, this is amazing. I'm going to go live and work in Chicago. And I hated every single minute of it. And I think the reason being is it wasn't the same company. It was a subsidiary company doing something really different. And you remember we had this beautiful, like, really open planned office.
Yeah.
So, you know, you could just walk through, which is a blessing and a curse. But, you know, there were lots of, we could keep in touch. It was very social. Where I was working in Chicago, it was very, like, cubes. So I came back to London.
Was it literally like cubicles, like you see on TV?
Do you know what? I have a photo that I took because I was like, I need to remember that I used to work in a cube exactly like you see on TV with my little name tag. It was exactly the same.
Crazy.
Exactly the same. And you know, I mean, life imitates art, art imitates life. I mean, the movies are there for a reason, right? It was exactly like that. And I mean, the work was fine, it was all fine, but it just wasn't the thing. So I came back to London, did my cupcakes for a bit, did Ragamuffins for a bit, and then was doing stuff in New York for an agency. Sorry, not for an agency, for a startup. And then when that got acquired, went to an agency and then got horribly burnt out around 2019 and decided to just quit everything. And around the beginning of 2020, like literally January, I was like, I'm going to just do this myself. I can do this. I'm smart. I can just start on my own agency. Why not? Right before COVID too and everything. And 5 years later, I'm still here. So...
So what's your agency do? What's it called? What do you do? Who are your clients?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So we are called Veruno.
Everyone, I'm really glad you said that, because I would have said, I would have said Bueno. So I'm Veruno.
Everyone does, like a Kinder Bueno. Everyone. Nice. It's just like Bueno. Yeah. Quite honestly, like it doesn't mean anything. Everyone's like, oh, what does it mean? I'm like, nothing. I just really wanted a 5-letter domain.
Nice.
I went through this whole process of naming a company, like all these, I had this whole framework for it. And then I just ended up looking up available domain names with 5 letters. And I was like, oh, I like the sound of that. That's literally where it came from. I think in Italian, it means this is one or there is one or something. And I've tried to
retrofit it.
Yeah, it doesn't work. It's just, I like it. So, and we basically were a growth marketing agency. So we do a bunch of different things: PPC, SEO, email, operations, strategy, content. And we do this really for like generally funded startups, or private, or, you know, non-funded, you know, it doesn't have to be VC backed. Who are at the stage where they've got their product or their service and they're looking for product market fit. And that's where we shoehorn in quite nicely and say, right, okay, great. So you've you know, figured out the thing and now you just need to know where to sell it. And we do a whole bunch of experimentation around like, who is your customer? Where are they? Where is their attention? And all that stuff. And basically help you find where your audience or your target customer is, and then pour a bunch of gasoline on it to get you lots of money.
Awesome. So you're basically
in a nutshell.
Yeah. So, like, is it fair to say your target audience is like pre-profit startups who are looking to scale?
Yeah.
And is that geographically disparate, or is that all in?
It's all in the US at the moment.
Deliberately think, or just by chance?
Just by chance, I think, because I mean, one of the amazing things about this agency is the majority of the clients that we've got have come through referrals.
That's so the best way.
It's absolutely amazing, and it's never lost on me how wonderful it is to be known by reputation, that we have this like constant stream of referrals coming in. It's amazing. And most of my network is in the US, so it just ends up being that a lot of our clients are in the US. We have had others in Paris before and in London before, which is obviously a little easier on the time zone. yeah, most of them are in the US.
I have this theory that agencies who are exceptional at marketing themselves, they do really brilliant content and they spend ages producing beautiful pieces of work for their LinkedIn and things like that. They're generally the worst agencies, because the good agencies, they're getting their clients through referrals and they just don't have time to market themselves.
That's exactly right. And it's so difficult as well to turn the lens on yourself and what you do. You know, and I think it's also something, like you say, it's always a thing that gets put on the back burner because we're just too busy.
Yeah, like it's always a nice to have. It's on that nice to have list. And then you're like, oh, God, no, I'd rather just spend that time on this client or that client. So where are your so you're in Greece, but where's everyone else?
Yes. So Vivian is in Southern California.
Oh my God.
Yes. Yeah, Southern California. She's fantastic. She actually came, she used to be one of our clients. She used to work with one of our clients, yeah. She's a phenomenal growth consultant. Phenomenal, phenomenal, phenomenal. She's so good at strategy. Millie is straddled between Ireland and the UK, Oxford. And she's great. She's our content person. And then George is based in Lithuania.
Right. So you've got...
And then we...
Oh, go on, you got more.
And we have a smattering of really, really talented like development people who are kind of, we use on a project by project basis, and they are based in Barcelona and Pakistan.
So you've got California, Barcelona, Pakistan, Ireland, and Lithuania.
Yes.
And Greece.
And Greece.
So as a leader, how do you keep everyone like... aligned? So you said that you mentioned Asana, but I guess I'm asking more around, so let's say you're onboarding a new client, right? And particularly the type of clients that you've got, they're all sort of startups. They're probably finding their own feet in terms of their product market fit. So how do you keep everyone aligned with the changes in that and with the data that comes out of your initial experiments?
Gosh, that's another great question. Just by having processes in place. You know, and we've done this so often that, you know, we know what works, and we do have like frameworks that so like, for example, when we've got a new client, there's a certain process to onboarding that client. Right. And I would like to say that everybody gets the same, but obviously no two clients are the same. So we do tweak it where needed for that particular client. It depends on what we're starting with them. The experimentation frameworks that we have, you know, it kind of gives us the base. And so we are constantly, you know, we know what we're measuring. We know what like our hypotheses are going to be for the different experiments. We know the schedules for them. Everything goes through Asana. We obviously use tools like Slack to keep us, and the clients are all in our Slack as well. So you know, everyone kind of has the ability to have that real-time DM capability, I guess, with us. And we just, you know, take the time to really go through. I mean, one of the things I think about us as well, and I don't want to say it's unique to us, but I know that we do it really well, is, you know, if someone comes to us, like we have a software development client. Software development is not my forte. At least it wasn't. It is now. But, you know, we really take the time to like learn what each client does, really learn about their industry. The whole team is on the client calls as well. Like we're super transparent. So it's not a case of, you know, I'm going to be on the call with the senior person on the client side. No, like it's literally like a stand up. On a Monday morning, or except for it's not Monday mornings, it's generally Wednesday evenings for us. But, you know, we all are on the call. There's no stupid question. Everybody has a chance to speak. We have really extensive notes and reporting that we share ahead of time. We're super transparent with everything. And I think the learning really comes from all of that back and forth from everybody on the client side, everybody on our side. And, you know, just also if something isn't working out in terms of a process and someone has a better way to do it, like, sure.
Yeah. Love great. That. Egoless leadership.
Yes. Yeah.
I think one of the things that I love about agency life is also one of the things that I loved about working at RBI, in that at RBI, we had something like 120 brands in different verticals, like from farming to dentistry to road and trucking, all sorts of weird and wonderful verticals. But I loved that. I loved that, you know, we had to very quickly get up to speed on entirely new industries. And I think we both probably learned that skill of like onboarding ourselves into new industries really, really quickly. AI helps a lot now, of course. Like we just got a new client in Georgia, in Tbilisi in Georgia. And I could honestly say I knew nothing about Georgia, except for the capital. It's called Tbilisi. And that's it. And that's only because of football, by the way. And when we were doing the research for the client, you know, I learned so many like amazing things. How like it's one of the highest GDP growths in all of Europe. How it's a candidate for EU membership. So many amazing things, and I was like, God, the world is like that's one of the awesome things about being in an agency. You get to learn about all these different countries and industries, and it's so awesome. So
it is, and varied.
Time for a quick message from this episode's sponsor. On the Impact Lab podcast, we're all about unlocking potential. And that's exactly what I've seen from Heaven Learning Academy. Not just for my daughter, but for students around the globe. Heaven Learning Academy is a UK-based British curriculum online school serving students in Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Qatar, and around the world. They specialize in delivering a world-class education that fosters curiosity, academic excellence, and it's all right from your home. If you're seeking a British education that impacts your child's future, no matter whether they're in reception or all the way through to A-levels, you should definitely explore Heaven Learning Academy. The links are in the show notes and you can contact them directly. All right, back to the show. It really varied, yeah. Nothing, no 2 days are the same, that's for sure. When you're hiring, right, obviously, you know, you're a boutique agency and you hire infrequently, right, because you're growing as you want to grow. You're choosing, I don't want to say it's a lifestyle business because it's not a lifestyle business. It's obviously a growth business. But yeah. But when you are hiring, how do you assess whether that person's a good team fit without having that face-to-face?
Yeah, that's been... Well, it has been tough, but I think I like to think that because I've had 20 or so years of like
10 times 2 years
of working, you know, face to face. I mean, obviously, I've also been on my fair share of interviews, right? I think you just have to trust your gut. So one of the things that we do is we do, and I know this is divisive, but we do projects or at least tasks, right? So I do have a very strict, there is a 2 hour, there's a 2 hour time limit. It's not about you getting it all done and finished. It's about, I just want to see, and it's usually like, especially for PPC, right? It's just, there's some very... What I've actually done is taken some of the most challenging things that we've done with clients and just kind of asked them, what would you do in these situations? Like, what would your recommendation be if this problem arose? Or ask them to just kind of do some very simple calculations around like reporting and stuff. We absolutely pay for people's time. There's no way that anyone's time is free. So those 2 hours you are compensated. So that's one thing, right? I think that, because people can, like you say, AI is a great tool now. So someone could easily just AI, like all of that. I mean, they could still do that, I guess, now with a task. But I think for me, it's really just down to gut feeling. Like I know, like George, for example, he is fantastic and he's been such a good hire. He actually wasn't the top choice in the beginning, but something in me, I was like, I'm just going to take the weekend to think about it. And I actually went round and round in my mind and I was like, I don't know why I'm pausing on this guy, because my gut is telling me he's going to be a really good person to work with. And I was right. I have been very wrong in the past. but I think it's just about learning, you know, and leaning on your gut feeling, because I think your gut is there for a reason. So pretty much, you know, are you qualified? I think that's an easy one to answer. I think it's just whether or not they are a fit. I know what I'm looking for. And I think I just know when I'm talking to that person or that kind of person.
I think you're fortunate to have that, like, gut feeling instinct capability. And I know, like, I don't have that. My wife, who is also like the head of accounts at the agency, she really does have that. She can spot a good un or a bad un from 100 miles away, and I just don't have that capability. So I'm very lucky to be able to like lean on her. Like, we do all of the things in a similar way in that, you know, we test for a lot of things though, because we're only hiring graduates. So we're not hiring experienced people. So what we're really looking for is just base IQ and mental dexterity and problem solving skills. So it's not like we're looking at capabilities, we're looking at how do they actually use their brain. So we have to do tests in and around that. But then in the end, it comes down to, well, what does your gut say? My gut always says, yeah, hire them, they'll be fine. But like my wife is really good at like saying, no, this guy's got this issue. And sometimes I've put my foot down and said, no, we're going to hire them. And I have 100% record of being wrong. So
I was going to say, like, there is that when someone has that intuition, for sure. And we also sense check, like, I'm not the only person who interviews, they get interviewed with, you know, other people around the agency as well. And it's a similar thing. I also do check-ins throughout that person's first year with the clients. Cause we also, I call them clients. We're more like partners. And I know that sounds a bit like, you know, like we're all friends, but we really are, like, we're, you know, we're not, it's not a kind of sterile client agency relationship, right? So I can turn around to any one of the clients and say, hey, so, you know, George is coming up for his 3 months or his 6 months or his 9 months. How do you feel? How do you feel he's doing? Are you happy? Like, you know, is there anything? And so we're just really transparent that way. Fortunately, everyone said great things about him and everyone else, which is good.
That's helpful.
I think having that other person to bounce back on, I do find it quite funny though that you have 100% track record of being wrong.
I think you know, I differentiate between like three types of agencies. I call them 1.0, 2.0, 3.0. So 1.0, the agencies that you and I kind of grew up with, and they're madman-esque agencies in that, you know, there is a very clear delineation between the client and the agency. And, that, you know, you throw things over a wall, they do something you don't quite understand, and you get something back, and you don't really understand why you got it. And it's surprising how many agencies still do that. 2.0 agencies are better in that it's like a menu, and they're more like software development agencies, right? So there's a menu of things, and you buy from the menu like you would in a restaurant. But then the challenge is that they're just providing a service, and once that's done, it's done. And then 3.0 agencies are much more like yours, and certainly the way that I view our agency is that I wouldn't say it's like a partner relationship. I would say that in our case, at least, we consider ourselves the marketing department or an extension of the marketing department of our client. Like, we very much view ourselves as an extension of the client. And even a lot of times, you know, they'll have us on their org charts. And that's it's a much more healthy way of building a client relationship, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, it's funny because we either slot in under a CMO who needs the expertise, but maybe doesn't have budget to build out the team that they need immediately, right, during this particular stage of the company, especially when they do need someone a little bit more senior. Or we are the kind of straight into the CEO as that kind of fractional CMO with a team that executes as well. And I think that's absolutely key, like being the extension of, we are part of your organization. I mean, even just this weekend, I was, you know, troubleshooting a conversion issue caused by change of a subdomain. But anyway,
which no one warned you about.
No one said a word. So we were just like, did this change? Oh, yeah. Oh, God. Okay. And so, but, you know, it's myself. George got a bit involved. He's actually just gone on vacation for 2 weeks. So that was a nice little, thanks very much. But, you know, it's the weekend. It's not expected at all from our clients to be like, you know, will you work weekends? I have no problem doing it because I care. It's not a case of, you know, nope, it's out of hours. I will look at this 9 o'clock Monday. And it's not that having those boundaries are bad, but it's sometimes you just need to show up for the clients. And that's the difference between having that really great relationship and partnership with them. Being a, I really love that, the three point 3.0 agency versus, you know, being Mr.
Mad Men style.
Exactly.
I think that's probably accentuated in the verticals that you're focused on as well, or at least the types of organization in their life cycle that you're focused on. Because startups, I mean, they do need that personal attention. They need that in the moment attention, and that I guess that's why you get recommended. That's why most of your clients come through recommendations, right? Is because there is like a personal touch that startups need. They need that like experience, and oftentimes it's just too expensive to hire a whole marketing team. It doesn't make financial sense, and you're not guaranteed to get like results. But how do you go about like building, again, because your clients are all remote too, right? So how do you go about building trust with those clients over the, because things go wrong.
Yeah.
Because it's life. So how do you go about building trust when things go wrong?
So it's funny, actually. So most of our clients are remote, but actually some are not. Some are like a hybrid model. Okay. And so one thing I found, startup founders are anxious. And I think that's compounded by, especially if they're VC backed, right? So there's a lot of pressure. It's a lot of pressure for them, right? And I get it. The way that we build trust, and I think it's the same if we were to be in office or not out of office or remote, right? But I think remotely it does take a little bit longer. It's really just do what you say you're going to do and be absolutely 100% consistent with that. Do not waver from it. If I tell you that this report is going to be with you Tuesday, that report is with you Tuesday, if not before. If I tell you I'm going to look into something like a problem, like conversion action, even if it's not my job, you're not going to hear that from us. Of course, it's my job because this impacts what we're doing and I'm part of the team. So I'm going to look at it. You might get a message from me on Saturday about it. You might get a message from me at 11 o'clock at night once I've put my kids to bed and, you know, kind of catching those last couple of hours before like it all goes like a finish for the day. But it's just that. Be consistent 100%. If I say I'm going to do something as an agency, if we say we're going to do something, we do it. And it takes a little bit longer because we're remote. But after a while, that trust question is just no longer there because that client just knows, oh, if I ask for Uno to do this or that, of course they're going to do it because they have 100% track record of doing exactly what they say they're going to do.
Yeah, I love that. And it's surprising, like it's been 13 years, but our philosophies are so aligned. Like I say, there are two like golden rules in the company. Make promises and keep them. Never hide your mistakes. And like, they're the two things that like, because mistakes happen. Like that's just a consequence of life, right? Nothing is perfect. The one thing that I can't deal with is if someone makes a mistake and then they try and hide it. Because it's like, okay, so if that's the case, that means I haven't built a safe environment for you to learn from your mistakes. But also the client's going to lose trust. They're not stupid. They know when mistakes happen. And the second, you know, the more important one is be bold enough to make promises and keep them. You make a promise, you keep it, whatever it takes. And if life happens and you can't keep it for any reason, you've got to be honest. Because that's a mistake. So you're just going to be honest back and say, listen, this has happened. It's not going to be on Tuesday. It's going to be Wednesday morning. Yeah. And so I think that like those two simple things, it's surprising how such simple things, which you could apply to any industry, to just life, you know, make promises and admit your mistakes. But they engender so much trust with clients.
Because I feel like there's so many, God, I had a term in my mind. I can't remember what it is, but there's so many bad actors out there. There we go. Right. I wouldn't say that people are necessarily they're not intentional about screwing you over, but they'll make promises and not know how to keep them. And maybe inexperience leads them down a path of, I'm going to break this promise. And then I'm just going to fade into the background and pretend like I'm just going to pretend like I don't see it didn't happen. And we have so many, we even ourselves, right, when we've hired people off of certain gig websites or anything like that, or even if we've made a bad hire, maybe, you know, one of those times when, you know, your wife is sitting over your shoulder saying, I told you so. And it's like, again.
As in half that happens.
you know, but it's, and we've been there and we know that feeling of just being let down. And so it's so, and I think the clients are exactly the same. They're in exactly the same position. I mean, I'm sure as a referral, we maybe weren't the first port of call for them. Maybe they tried a gig site, found someone who promised that they could deliver, you know, an 8 ROAS on Google Ads, and all they had to pay was $500 a month, including ad spend. And then, you know, oh, that seems too good to be true, which generally my philosophy yeah,
generally
also
it is.
And it is always, yeah. Almost always.
And that's, I think, the challenge as well. Like, agent, our industry has got such a bad reputation because of bad actors. And, like, without exception, the bad actors are the cheapest ones, right? Because, and so what I find, I don't know if you find something similar, it's like a client will come to us, again, almost always from recommendation, or from reputation, more from reputation now than recommendation, but, and they'll say, yeah, but, you know, we got this quote from this agency. And that is the end of the pitch process for me. And I immediately always say, without fail, okay, cool, you should definitely go and use them. Okay? Mm. Go and use them. Because I don't negotiate on price, one. Our price is just our price. We're not expensive, but we're not cheap. Yeah. And that's what it costs to work with us. But two, if you're comparing us on price, go and use the other agency, and I'll see you in 3 months. Yes. And almost always, they do. And almost always they'll come back 3 months later and say, yeah, how did you know? I was like, because our world is filled with bad actors. Mm. Our world is filled with agencies who, you know, they're out to make a quick buck. And it's the worst part of it is now is that there's this whole new breed of agency called the AI agency. And I love AI. I use it all the time. But if you've got a totally AI agency, you don't have an agency. You've got ChatGPT subscription. That's what you've got. Yeah. And so it's kind of really infuriating. But anyway, I want you to tell me a story. And maybe you'd have one at hand. Maybe you'll have to spend a moment to think about it. But I want a story that taught you like a hard lesson about managing either employees or clients remotely and what you learned from that story.
Ooh, I think it would have to be, and again, this is owning up to a mistake. So I actually made my first hire at Vono, which was initially just supposed to be maternity cover. Because not only did I decide to start an agency right before the pandemic, I also decided to have two kids during the last 5 years as well. So because I'm clearly not busy enough, right? So the first, so I was, I think about two and a half months off having my first. So I was like, oh, I should probably think about like hiring someone because, you know, and of course, naively as well, I was like, I'm probably only going to be out for like a week and then I'll come back. Obviously, like never having had a kid before, I realized that's completely, but anyway. And I was like, and we're kind of at a point as well where, you know, we need the help. So I hired someone and initially they were fantastic. They did a really good job, apparently, according to me, from the updates I was getting from them, of managing all the clients and everything seemed to be ticking over. And I only took 2 months off. And, you know, because fortunate enough to work from home, I could kind of come phase my kind of, a, you know, return back to work. Also, while, you know, my son was still a potato and just on the floor, not on the floor, but in like, you know, his little bouncy thing, but just on the floor. You know, so I could, like, there were many times I could come back to work. And I think my very first client meeting was just like, yeah, he's got to go. I don't want to deal with him anymore. And I was like, oh, what do you mean?
And there was no inkling of this before that.
Because wow. I wasn't talking with the clients. I was talking got with it. Him because I didn't want to have that face to face with the clients. And they were so nice and respectful of my boundary because I just had a baby. So they were all like, I don't want to bother her with this. But as soon as I was like, hey, I'm back. Let's have a catch up. It was like, he's got to go. And I was like, oh, gosh, what? Tell me like what's been going on. And it just, Tried to change the cadence of meetings to like once a month. Like we have a very strict once a week because it's very important to have that check-in. Sometimes those meetings are only 10 minutes, sometimes they're an hour. You know, we schedule half an hour, but it's a very important to keep, because when you're remote, someone's not there next to you seeing that you're working. You have to over communicate when you're remote, right? To just be make sure that people know that you're there, you're present, you're on it, you're working. Even if it's just sending a Slack message saying, "Hey, just to let you know I'm still working on this, I'll give you a bit more of an update tomorrow." And there were a number of different things. Technically, he was fine in what he was executing, but in terms of like a management, like we really pride ourselves on being very white glove service, and he was just very 2.0, you know, like, "Hey, you chose this off the menu, and that's what I'm gonna do." And my mistake was I didn't fire him until 2 years later. So I kept him on for another 2 years. My husband, probably similar to your wife, was like, "What are you doing? What are you doing?" And it's actually when I went to have my second child, I was like, "I can't leave him in charge of this. I'm not gonna have an agency when I come back." And I realized, you know, I need to hire people that aren't just good at executing, where I'm there to oversee everything. Like I need to hire people that care. And it was so obvious, and the things that he was doing, it was so obvious that he didn't care to the degree that I needed him to. And that's fine. This isn't the place for you. So managing that taught me a really, harsh lesson, because I think I don't necessarily blame him. I feel like as the leader, that was on me, because I didn't set the expectations, or I didn't communicate the expectations. Maybe I didn't give him the support he needed because I was preoccupied, you know, making babies and raising babies. And I think that for me, the buck always stops with me. So if someone's not performing, if something's going wrong, it's on me. And if it still continues, and I do genuinely can put my hand up and say, "I have done as much as I possibly can to support you," maybe this isn't a fit and we'll part ways. So that I think is probably the one that comes to mind the most.
I think in this scenario, you are still very much like my wife. She also has she over indexes on loyalty. And so, you know, she really struggles to give up on people. And I think you articulated it really well. Nobody is inherently bad. It's about fit. And that particular employee, I'm sure, fits perfectly well in a certain type of organization, and he'll do an exceptional job, and he'll be loved for doing it. But in your organization, you know, it doesn't fit, and that doesn't make him bad or you good. It's just a fit thing. And yeah, like 2 years is a little excessive, but still.
I know. Husband was like, "Is he still working?" I was like, "Yes." I was like, "I don't want to hear it. I've had a long day."
Oh, bless. All right, let's change pace. Let's move away from work, because you moved from the UK to Greece.
I
And so
did.
what's been the biggest sort of lifestyle change?
Oh, apart from my melt, I'm Northern European. I'm not made for these Southern European summers. My gosh. And you know what? It's so funny. When you come from the UK to Greece, it's such a big difference, because you're like, "Ugh." At least where you live here, you do ease into the summer a little bit, but nothing preps you for July and August. Like, I barely leave the house. It's too much. But I think the biggest, the most unexpected difference is how processes work. Like, it's very convoluted. It's like people got together and said, "How can we make getting a permit for this?" Or like, I had to get obviously a residency card, thanks Brexit. You know, how do we make this as convoluted as possible? Let's do that. And obviously not speaking the language very well either compounds things. I think that's probably more the issue, because if I spoke the language better, I'd probably I have a much easier time without having to drag my husband along as like the translator. But I think that I think I wasn't prepared for just how hot it was going to be all the time, and just how difficult it was to, because I've got a Greek husband. So I was like, you know, yeah, I've been here. My husband's Greek. I know Greeks. Obviously, he got a bunch of Greek friends. We hung out with Greeks in London. So I thought I would just move, just pick up my life and move here, and it would be seamless. And it really wasn't.
I mean, I love Greece, but I also love the Greek lifestyle. I don't know if we talked about this last time. You know, like Greek culture is very, very similar to Arab culture, like really similar.
Really?
Yeah, even some of the really small, obscure behaviors around weddings and things like that, they're very, very similar. But my mum just moved back to the UK. She was in Dubai for a while. My mum's like retired, right? So she just hangs out where her boys are. So sometimes she'll go to Dubai and
Nice.
Saudi and Egypt, and so she's gone to the UK. And I was just on the phone with her yesterday, and I said to her, "So what's different?" She goes, "Oh, it's really expensive. The UK's become so expensive." I said, "Yeah, how much is a Big Mac meal? Because that's the measure of how expensive something is, right?" When I left the UK in 2017, a Big Mac meal was 3.99. Medium
I was going
Big
to
Mac
say,
meal
it's
with a Coke,
£3.99, I think, right?
£8.
Stop! No, it's not.
8 quid for a Big Mac meal. I was like, "Well, they should wear a hood and a stripy jumper then, shouldn't they? That's unbelievable."
That's crazy.
But
£8.
yeah, thanks Brexit again, by the way. That was one of the side sort of unintended consequences, I guess, of, or maybe it was intended, who knows?
But the rise in cost of Big Macs.
Yeah, exactly. It was Ronald McDonald was behind the whole thing. I knew it. I knew it from the start. I knew it from the start. He was the one saying we're going to save £350 million a day if we leave the EU, and the reason he did it is so that he could increase the price of his Big Macs. Bloody Ronald McDonald, that pesky little bugger. When we spoke last week, you described how you'd like really intentionally designed your day. Like your day is a bit weird, right? But you've designed
Yes.
it to fit your lifestyle. So what was the
Yeah.
process? Was that like a trial and improvement thing, or did you sit down and go, right, this is how my day is going to go? Well, describe your day first, actually, because I think
Yeah,
you.
okay. So, I mean, I'm not gonna, not now, because it's different because my son's not at school, but typically for the majority of the year, I get woken up by one or both of kids, you know, jumping on the bed. Mommy! So up I get. I'm never used to that because I'm just like, what? Oh God, okay, what time is it? Oh guys, it's 5. Come on, give me a break. You know, they you know, but we it's very much focus on the kids. Let's get dressed, let's have breakfast, let's get in the car, come on. I never understood before I became a parent how many times I would be like, guys, come on, let's go. Shoes, 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 teeth, 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 clothes. Like you repeat the same thing over and over again. And then, you know, we have a sing song in the car, we get ourselves hyped up for the day, come back with my daughter because she doesn't go to school, kick her over to grandma's, who is 2 doors away, and then out of mum mode into work mode. And then I start, you know, make a coffee, start doing work and having emails, having a couple of meetings, and then go grab my son. How was your day? Have a little play, back to work mode, take a break to, you know, shove some food down me and then see the kids again. We have a babysitter that comes every day. And then stop work, like hard stop. We'll not have any calls or anything like that because it's bedtime and we sit and we watch animals or aminals on the TV, milk, cuddles, put to bed. And then if I've got energy left, I'll go back and wrap up a couple because I don't always get to finish everything. So I might just wrap up a couple of things so I can just be like, at least I know that that's a nice little bow tied for the day and I can just start tomorrow. Not in the middle of a task. And then me and my husband see each other like, hey, husband, how are you? What's your day? And then, you know, we sit and watch something and then, you know, pass out. And it's 100% by design because one of the reasons why, one of the biggest reasons also why I wanted to start Veuno was to have complete autonomy over my time. And not just myself, everybody who works at the company, we have complete autonomy over our time. If you have kids, Or even if you don't, if you just want to go, you know, to the gym, or you're really into going and having like a swim first thing in the morning, you know, but you want to go off peak hours and you want to go at 9 o'clock or something, that's totally fine. As long as you get your work done, as long as you are on the calls, as long as you are available. Like, we do have like a minimum 4 hour overlap between when clients are online and when we're online, just so we can make sure that there is always someone there. You know, it's about having that, because I remember being in Quadrant House. I think we used to call it Quadrant Towers because it was this really big grey, like 27 floors.
It was massive.
And I think we were on like the 19th or something, you know. And I remember just staring out of the window on those really sunny days and thinking, man, I wish I could just pick up all my stuff and go to the park. But you can't, because you're tied to the desk and you're tied to, no, because I have to stay in these four walls 9 to 5. Like, that's it. That's it. But now I can do what I want when I want. And I find that actually, and I used to, before burnout as well, I used to work so many hours per day. And I find that I'm so much more intentional in everything I do. And I'm completely present in those moments by compartmentalizing being a parent, being, you know, working at the agency and being a wife, or just doing something for myself, you know, like just, and making time for all of these things and being totally present in those moments versus, you know, half looking after the kids or half keeping my own slack while I'm trying to pacify, you know, a kid who's having a meltdown about a bike that there's nothing wrong with it, they just don't like it for today. You know, when you've got four kids yourself, you know how it goes. So I think that is completely by design, absolutely intentional, and bit bonkers, but I really wouldn't have it any other way.
It's basically, though, impossible to go back to a. It's a bit mean for me to say this, but this is what I say generic McJobs. Like, I could never go back to that. I could never go back to being like the CEO of a company or head of product. I could just never go back to that way of working. When I can choose to like design my day, that's it. The first week of doing that, you're like, oh yeah, well, I'm never going back to a company. That's just never going to happen again.
No. And you have to, it's not for the faint hearted, I think, as well, because it does take a lot of unlearning, right? You have to unlearn the expectations, like, oh my God, I must sit down and be online and be seen to be online. Like, it's okay. And this is again about the trust, you know, like, I trust everyone on my team because they deliver. I don't have to sit there and be like, why, it's 9 o'clock in the morning, why aren't you on Slack? Because, you know, it's, I trust him. I trust Vivian. I trust Millie. Like, they're all doing their thing and they all execute and they all do everything that they're supposed to do and more. And it's really lovely. And yeah, you're right. Like, to have that expectation and also reframe in your mind what work is. Yeah. Sometimes I'm thinking about work. I might just be doing the dishes or something, but I need to take a break from my computer so I can just, I just need to like marinate on a few things, you know. And it's just because I'm sat at my desk doesn't mean the best of me is like coming out. Sometimes it happens when I'm in the car, or sometimes it happens when I'm, you know, doing a mundane task like washing up. And I think, oh, that's the thing I'm missing. Great. Yeah. Okay. Coffee, and then sit back down and yes, now I feel good about whatever it is I was doing.
Yeah. Like, effectiveness and impactfulness are just that they're not correlated to time. They're not, and to a large extent, they're not correlated to effort. Mm-hmm. Like, the most impactful things, I think, do you remember that book, The 4-Hour Work Week?
Yes.
I hated that book. Like, I read it, but I absolutely hated it because it was essentially, what it was saying was, if you work in a corporate job, you can do your entire job in 4 hours a week, which actually is technically true. But the bigger question that it never really answers is, why are you working that job? Why are you wasting 40 hours a week on something that you can do in four? And I think, you know, our agency tagline is marketing that makes an impact. And that's not just like a tagline. That's like the obsession that we have, is we experiment all the time. And it's like, okay, what actually makes an impact? And if it doesn't make an impact, we just don't do it, right? And I think that that's the same in terms of like your day-to-day life. Like if you say, right, I've got 8 hours sleep, that gives me, what's that, 16 hours left in the day. I'm going to go to the gym for 2 hours. I'm going to be eating for an hour. I'm going to have husband-wife time for 2 hours. Now I've got a limit. I've got 2 hours of kid time, right? I've got a limited amount of time in my day. How can I be most effective? And when you start like with that premise, it's surprising how many like busy work tasks just disappear. Yeah. And you're like, actually, that's not valuable. If I just do the thing that's valuable, I'll. Mm-hmm. I remember we did this experiment earlier this year. We took over a client and they had been very active on LinkedIn. And they'd posted something like in the previous month, they'd posted 40 posts on LinkedIn, which if I was to give you any of the individual posts, you'd be like, yeah, that's a good post. Like they were good thought leadership posts. They were perfectly good, lovely designs, well written. And the team took out all of the data for the last year from that client. And they identified three post types that were outliers, had disproportionate amount of engagement and reach. And so they said, right, what we're going to do is instead of doing 40 posts for this client in this month, we're just going to do 10 posts, but we're only going to follow the three formats that we've identified. And they did those 10 posts. By the ninth post, they had done triple the reach, triple the engagement, triple the comments, and grown followers as well. By the ninth post. Mm-hmm. So a quarter of the work delivered 300% more of the value. And that's what I mean by like impact and effectiveness. So many people just, because I think university and school trains you to be good workers, but not effective workers. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, not to bring it back to work, but I think that's also what makes a really bad marketing strategy is when people confuse activity for impact.
Yes. That's a really good way of putting it. Yeah.
Just because we're busy, just because we're producing, just because, you know, and trying to be all things, right? You try and put like, oh, we want to be on TikTok and Instagram, and we want to also be on LinkedIn. You know, like focus on one.
Yeah.
Just because all those channels are available and you might be consuming content there, where's your ICP? And what's the best thing for them? Let's start somewhere, especially, you know, the stages that we work with. Ideal customer profile, persona, whatever you want to call it, customer target audience. You know, like if they're, you know, you don't, especially like the stages that we work at as well, we don't know. And I say that a lot to a lot of clients when we very start working with them. I don't yet know what's going to work for you. I love it if you come to us with historical data, because I'm gonna eat that and really like look into it and be like, okay, this looks like you had a kind of what you were just talking about. This looks like this got some traction for you. So this is really good insight, but we're still gonna start from scratch.
Yeah.
Just have that in our minds, right? And then after 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, because I think that's also key, give it time.
100%. Go. That works for clients too, right? This whole activity versus impact thing works for clients too. Like I always, if I've got I'd like to say I'm close to all of my clients, but there are some who are actual friends from before being a client. So I always say to them, listen, your objective in life is to be my agency's favorite client. If you're our favorite client, you will get over-serviced by default, right?
Yeah.
Just be their favorite client. And I remember one client who used to go into the Google Ads account and check what amendments had been made and whether there'd been any amendments. And he kept saying, yeah, you guys haven't done anything. You haven't changed anything in the last like 21 days. I'm like, yeah, because that's not how it works, man. When you've got, like, you got to let the things run and get the data and allow the algorithms to do their thing. And if it's working, why change it? But his own mental model was around activity versus impact. He was very much in the activity space. Selena, I've kept you for a long time, but I'm going to give you one last question, like a bit of a curveball.
Yeah.
So let's go with what is the best decision that you ever made that at the time didn't feel like it was going to be a smart move.
Easy. Quitting my job. Quitting my job with absolutely nothing ahead. I kind of mentioned it. I think, you know, got to a point where I had burnout. I mean, I'm talking like serious, serious burnout, which I've never had before. And I mean, and you know me as well. Like, I'm just like, you know, when it comes to work, I'm like, yeah, pile it on. And I was like 15 clients, execution and account management. There was just not enough time in the day. I felt awful. I couldn't give people the time that they wanted. It really weighed on my conscience, to be honest, because I thought, I am doing a crappy job for all of these people and they deserve better. And I deserve better. I was like, I can't do this. I can't do this. And I went to Germany with some friends for Friendsgiving, had a fantastic time, came back and was like, I've just got to quit. I've just got to do it. And I don't have anything lined up. And that is the first time in my life that I quit a job without having the next thing lined up. And but I just needed to do it. And I had enough money in the bank that I could be all right for 6 months and around. But I needed to have another job by 6 months. And I had one client that I was just doing, like, you know, hustle on the side. And I was like, well, with them and what I've got in the bank, like, oh, okay, you know. And obviously having no idea COVID was about to hit. So that, I quit. And I was like, oh, I'll find another job. And then ended up starting an agency. And it has been the best thing ever. I honestly, I love it. I love it. I love my job. I love my work. I love my team. I love our clients. I love my life. I love my life.
A lovely way to end. Thank you so much, Selena. Really, really appreciate it. People are going to get a lot from this episode. So before I cut off, guys, you can go to the impactlab.store. On there at the moment, we have got the latest free course, which is the prompt monkey problem. Don't be a prompt monkey. You know, learn how to use AI to build your foundational skills and not be led by AI, but work with it like a sparring partner. Selena, thank you so much. I'll see you all at the next episode of the Impact Lab podcast. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Before you go, I just want 30 more seconds of your time. Firstly, thank you for taking the time to listen to the podcast. If you enjoyed it, please do take a moment to leave us a review. It really helps getting exposure to the podcast for other people. We only do this stuff for you, so please do take a moment to leave a review. If you are interested in our digital marketing agency, Cush Digital, you can go to cush.digital and hit the contact form and we'll get right back to you. The Impact Lab has a free course on the website called The Prompt Monkey Problem. So if you think that you are in that category of people who are using AI too much and not necessarily building foundational skills or foundational knowledge, go to the impactlab.store and you can sign up for the course entirely free. No catch, no credit card, nothing. Just jump in, do the course, get your certificate, and then start building your own foundational knowledge in marketing. Thank you very much for your time, and we look forward to seeing you at the next episode.